When was the last time you backed up your work?
I don't do that.
You don't back up?
No.
I'll call you if we find anything.
If?
78! Number 78!
No one talks about backing up. You've never used that expression with me before ever, but apparently everybody's secretly running home at night and backing up their work.
You have to get yourself a backup system. Pick out a zip drive. Start saving. Next time you won't lose everything.
Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're gonna learn today.
Innovate like a startup. Deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeed up and ready because it's gonna be a great day.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Aero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 81. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Aero, and joining me once again is Mr. John Nicholson. John, how you doing, man?
I'm having a nerdy morning, man. Just digging through some tech docs, trying to get ready for VMworld.
Nice.
Get my sessions together because I totally created all of those sessions I submitted and didn't wait to find out if they were accepted or not. So
yeah. Oh yeah, they're all done. All the demos are produced. Everything's ready. We're ready to go.
Exactly. And although I did catch a nice video this morning. Someone had benchmarked Oracle on NVDIMMs on Bare Metal versus vSphere. I tweeted that out today. So if anyone's looking for that, some impressive results. Glad to see we can virtualize NVDIMMs with almost no overhead.
Nice. So before we get started, just a quick story, a little embarrassing here, but this weekend I went mountain bike riding for the first time in a long time with a good buddy of mine over at Sensei, Mike Turner. You know Sensei, the analytics company?
Yeah.
Yeah, my buddy Mike works over there. And so he's been bugging me to go mountain bike riding with him for a while. And I was like, yeah, I'll go. So I finally went with him. Man, first of all, he's got like this $8,000 awesome mountain bike and all the extras, bells and whistles. I go out there on my $300 Trek and... You know, so we start mountain bike riding and man, I am just, first of all, my chain breaks while we're riding and I have no tools. So I'm like screwed. And Mike's like an Eagle Scout, comes to the rescue, fixes my chain for me. And, you know, we ride in about another 5 or 10 minutes, flat tire. I'm like, oh man. So then I have to fix my flat, which I don't have anything to fix it. So Mike, again, comes to the rescue, pulls out his tool kit, you know, his pump, his patch kit, everything, gets my tire going. So man, my bike was just not ready for that trip, but it was fun. It was a little humbling riding next to someone who's got all the real gear, but it was still a fun trip.
I'm imagining you like on the side of the road, like just slowly pushing a bike all sad. You
know, it was even more embarrassing than that because I was actually on the trail and I have like older tires. I didn't even know that the more modern bikes have different types of tires with different like pumps and everything. So, so he didn't have a pump for my original tire. So everybody kept riding by with these really nice bikes and they were like, oh, you need help? Oh, I can't help you with that old bike. No. So yeah, a little humbling, but it made me think. I was like, I'm going to share that on this week because this week we're talking about backups and how backups have come really far. Like traditional backups were kind of long in the tooth for a really long time. And I remember a long time ago being a backup administrator and just fighting with old tapes and inventorying and just tons of problems. So I thought it would be cool to bring on one of our buddies from IBM, which is one of the major backup vendors out there, and talk a little bit about where backup was and what modern backup looks like now. So joining us this week on the podcast is a good friend of mine from IBM, Mr. Narayan Kumar. Narayan, how you doing, man?
Hey, good. Thanks for hosting me on this podcast. It's been a great show. I've been actually following you guys since I would say when you released your second or third podcast. And since then, it's my auto subscribe. And whenever you guys have a new one, it's downloaded and ready to go on my run. So it's been nice. Fantastic. Yeah.
Well, thanks for listening, man. That's awesome. I know we did some back work. IBM has like their traditional backup. It had a couple of names. I think at one point it was from Tivoli, but now it's like IBM Spectrum Protect. And so I was working with Kumar because, we've got a bunch of vSAN in our labs. And so we wanted to try different backups. And so we used this new product called Spectrum Protect Plus, which is sort of a spinoff of IBM Spectrum Protect. And works great with vSAN. And it was really cool to see. And so it got Narayan and I talking about backups. And so thank you for coming on. And I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Absolutely. And actually, since you touched upon the vSAN, our story also aligns pretty well with VMware on how the software should be deployed in a software-defined infrastructure and backing up. Doesn't matter, you know, what virtualization or what storage underneath you have. It doesn't really matter. Like how, you know, we have vSAN from a storage perspective. We do the same thing from a backup perspective. You just deploy this and should be ready to back up in an hour. So that's the team, that's the methodology which we had in our mind when we developed the software.
Nice, nice. Yeah, John and I are both Veeam vanguards. We love the backup software Veeam. And, you know, so Veeam is obviously in the leader quadrant of backups, as well as IBM and Commvault, Dell EMC, and Veritas. So those are the big players, I think, in terms of backup. And so I think you definitely qualify to have this conversation with us. I would consider you an authoritative source on backup.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, absolutely. Since you brought up the Gartner Magic Quadrant, and the reason, and there's a reason why you see all those companies in the leader Magic Quadrant is because we support, and all of them out there, like Veeam, IBM, and Palm, we all support a wide variety of use cases and a variety of media, and that fits, you know, different use cases from different customers' perspective. And that's why you see all those software out there which are in the leader quadrant.
You mentioned supporting a lot of different types of media. I know back in the day, I you know, cursed at tape quite a bit. But I mean, it's obviously not going anywhere for certain archive use cases, but it's been interesting to follow the transition of what we use as a backup target. I mean, obviously primary storage is advanced. We've got all these things, but what have you seen that's been important kind of in that transformation of what people are using as a backup target as we've, you know, hopefully moved off of tape, at least primary landing?
Good question. What we've been seeing is, you know, tape is, as you said, tape is not going anywhere. People still, there are quite a lot of, and we support from IBM perspective, we've been supporting tape for the last many, many years, and tape is not going anywhere. So tape support is absolutely big for financial people, big for some of the hospital companies. We want to retain those records for, you know, 7 years and 10 years. So there's a, I mean, the new media which everyone is trying to get into is the cloud object storage, and that's the big piece. So we do support from a supporting standpoint on IBM Spectrum Protect, and things are getting better with the Spectrum Protect Plus, where you will start seeing support for new destinations. Today, we support the software-defined storage, but you know, long-term, you'll see start seeing cloud object storage as a new emerging destination for backup targets.
It's interesting thinking about some of the transformation, you know, some of the reasons why people necessarily may have not liked tape or wanted to move beyond tape for primary landing was performance. You know, we went to disk just so we could back up faster. And then we had, you know, purpose-built backup appliance, and then now the push to object. And I remember when first we were talking about backing up to object, I was thinking, well, the challenge there is now I'm backing up over my WAN. It's slow. But we also are now putting more and more virtual machines in said cloud. So then, you know, you're backing up over their LAN, I guess, so to speak. Or what are you seeing how people are addressing, I guess, the speeds of backup as well as the speed of recovery of rehydrating that data?
That is becoming, you know, that's, we term that as the operational recovery, right? So the operational recovery is becoming key because people want to get to their data as quickly as possible. And how quickly I can actually replicate my DevOps environment, how quickly I can actually test a Windows patch, for instance, right? So I can actually spin up a Windows server and test the patches. And these all, keep in mind, these are all you're not doing just from your backup data set. These also has to be done from your kind of a live environment. So you can actually clone live environments and actually test. And you can spin up some new requirements, like I need to spin this up in a fenced environment, in a VMware fenced environment, right? So that it doesn't interact or do damage to my production environment, but at the same time, I keep them isolated to test it. So these are some of the new requirements from an operational recovery that, you know, customers putting for that I need to get to my data as quickly as possible so I can actually replicate and test my patches and things like that. So it is definitely key from a speed standpoint.
Well, I like that whole idea of putting your backups to work. Like you don't just go throw them in a vault and then, you know, it's the classic throw the tapes in the vault or in the giant, you know, mountain made out of a not so precious metal, but instead using them as part of a test dev workflow or cloning that, or if, you know, I've got that 80 terabyte database and I need 8 copies every morning ready for the developers and a little fenced environment to go play with. It's interesting seeing that drive conversations instead of how cheap can my backup target be to my backup target actually needs some flash, it needs some performance.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, right? It all depends on who you ask. Like when you're asking, you know, maybe the C-level folks, that, you know, their questions are going to be like, well, I need to have a specific amount of uptime and it needs to be a certain price. Maybe you ask the backup administrator is going to have a different set of requirements versus maybe someone in your dev team that's like, look, I need to be able to spin up clones of this environment quickly for testing. Whereas, you know, the user says, well, I just need to be able to recover files. You know, so everyone has like different requirements. And
this
I know
is the blind man of the elephant is scoping a backup solution. So,
yeah, exactly.
It is. And actually, you know, you'll be surprised when we start, when we talk to customers, the type of requirements that they come in with, you know, I need to do, you know, file level recovery. I need to do snapshots. I need to retain them for this X amount of days. Oh, and I also need to actually quickly recover. Now, as you know, the, you know, disks and the flash media are becoming cheaper and cheaper over a period of time, but it won't be that long that when you start seeing these, you know, backup data repositories will be on flash someday. And that's the speed and feed that you're talking about, how quickly I can recover at that point.
So let's talk about that recovery a little more here. Let's talk about what are you recovering? Because back in the day, I mean, a lot of backup products that I worked with, if you weren't working with the higher end ones, you often just got nothing better than file level recovery. So my workflow would be reinstall Windows.
Ouch.
And then, yeah, exactly. You know, I had my little SBS server in a closet that was poorly ventilated, and I'm having to like, you know, squat awkwardly for the tiny, you know, monitor that Tim forgot. And I'd have to reinstall Windows, and then I'd have to load the tapes and go through the tapes and restore the files over it, and hope that the Windows system state recovery worked. And I had to make sure that, you know, potentially that if I was the Windows media I had was an older version, I have to run Windows Update and get to the right service pack before the recovery would work. So, I mean, I remember spending basically and you know, having to feed 7 or 8 tapes. I spent 2 days in a closet one time doing a recovery versus the, you know, block level recovery, you know, virtual machine level recovery, the, you know, which is really what attracted me to virtual machines, was just being able to recover the entire thing and not spend 2 days in a sweaty closet. And then I guess you've got Brick and File and NDMP. What are you seeing people, you know, talk about? Are they paying more attention to that? Are they just wanting virtual machine level, or are they wanting, you know, all of the above, or what?
So from a broader portfolio standpoint, I mean, Spectrum Protect, as our bigger software from a standpoint, we support physical machine recovery. And then from a Protect Plus standpoint, everything virtual. So you can name it. We support Hyper-V recovery. We support VMware virtual VM recovery with a granularity with the VMDK level, right? So you can attach it to any VM and you can browse through and recover that. Not only that, we take it one step further and we collect all the metadata inside the VM and say, okay, if you're looking for a specific file like john.doc or whatever, and we have this search capability within the product, which you can, you know, type in and search, it will go across hypervisors, it could go across ESX servers and actually bring up the file that you're looking for. Not only that, it actually gives you where you want to recover on which ESX server or which VM or alternate location. So the customers are asking that level of granularity, saying, I need this to be flexible enough to so that I can, you know, hand this off to my help desk, and with our role-based access model, we can actually, you can create granular role-based access to say, okay, help desk can do file level recovery, and they can actually, you can actually, you know, basically delegate to them, and they can actually do this recovery. So that's the level of granularity that people are actually looking for.
And that's something that pre-indexing all the metadata and doing that. I mean, I've worked with some products in the past that they could give me a VMDK, but I don't know where this file was.
You got to find it first.
Then I got to attach it. I got to do all this work.
Yep.
And, you know, the goal to being a good backup admin is being as lazy as possible and trying to get everyone else to do your job for you. And so being able to offload that to make that a self-service model, being able to push that out, that just seems like a core requirement of modern backup at this point, you know, when you have any real scale, because otherwise your backup admins are going to be playing find the file all day, which is a colossal waste of time and resources.
Right. And self-service has become a big thing. I mean, people are asking integration with vRealize operations, right? So where it should basically automate certain tasks. Say, for example, I'm provisioning a VM. And today, in these days, not only just provisioning, but you want to ensure that these VMs, when you provision them, are also part of your SLAs, that they're backed up. I mean, you're not just throwing this provisioning mechanism over the fence and then later on the backup admin realizing, oh, I need to back up this particular VM. It's new in my farm. The newer modern softwares need to have those REST APIs integration, or using those Python scripts, you can actually integrate into that complete workflow, right from provisioning to backup, to put adding them to the SLA backup, in the cases to restore, and do the complete reverse whenever you're actually doing any workflow automation. So that is also another big use case, or I would say like a key requirement.
Well, and pushing particularly back on the developer, the application owner, you know, pushing that back or automating that SLA, because it's shocking how many times I remember back in the early days of VM backup, is new VMs would get created, no one remembered to add them to the backup job.
Yeah.
We would kind of try to hack our way around and be like, well, let's just auto backup everything in the cluster and work on an exclude basis. But people need different SLAs. You don't need the platinum, you know, package with spinning rims for every single virtual machine. There's a lot of stuff that doesn't need that.
In fact, one thing which we use is we use VMware tagging extensively. So if you are a VMware tagging fan, you just properly tag your VMs on the backend. And then if you have the appropriate SLAs tagged with those, then automatically we pick up those VMs and start backing up. So the backup admins doesn't have to worry about like what you're talking about, John.
Yeah, that's nice.
The tags are a great system. It's something I don't think people fully captured all the power always when I talked to them about it. But yeah, and you can put those onto templates and clone off of them. So you can make this pretty accessible, even if you're not a full cloud ninja.
Yeah, but one of the problems, like when you enable your users to, you know, have a self-service portal for doing their backups, you know what happens, right? All of a sudden, everyone has like 30 backups and they keep them there for a long time. And depending on the back-end technology, that can actually eat up a lot of space, which is why a lot of companies leverage some form of snapshots, whether it's array-based snapshots or, you know, some type of snapshot. And I know, John, right? Snapshots, are they backups or not, John?
Oh, God. This is like a religious war. I need to grab a sword or some type of weapon in my hand to wave. Really, while I give the speech. So snapshots are not backups.
Exactly.
They are part of a data protection strategy.
Right. But I think every modern backup solution should have the ability to use snapshots, right? Because obviously they make it more efficient, right?
Yeah. And it's part of that orchestration workflow. And if you can snap or coordinate the snapping at the source, and so that way you can have that, okay, we understand in a full fire flood blood, we're going to have to go to the backup that's actually been copied somewhere. But if someone did something silly and they made an oopsie and they need to go back an hour, you know, the local snap may be able to help cover that gap. But you need that not to be the storage admin managing that and the backup admin managing the other. You need that all in one pipeline.
See, on the snapshots, so basically, I mean, as you guys touched upon, there's, again, this is also becoming one of the other requirements where customers are using a wide variety of storage. And each vendor you can think of, they have NetApp, they have IBM, they have Pure Storage, we have, you know, Hitachi and things. So when you look at customers' data center, they just not go with only one storage vendor. They have multiple for different purposes in things. Now, obviously, you know, managing those snapshots become a big part of their data lifecycle, right? So how do I manage all these snapshots people create, as Pete mentioned, and just create and leave them out there and consume space on it? So Spectrum CDM actually solves all those issues because completely lifecycles manages. It not only actually automates and manage and does replication. In fact, the deepest level of integration we have is with the NetApp Array. It not only does creation and managing of snapshot, but also to a level that it can replicate and do snap vaulting and manage all that on your secondary head in your remote data center. So it is becoming, you know, copy data management is also another big piece of this, you know, backup and recovery strategies.
Well, that's been watching vVols evolve has been interesting watching kind of that same capability of from initial, hey, here's some sublin objects to here's snap schedules, here's replication. Finding a way to orchestrate that at a higher level and tie that to an SLA, that's something we need, not just to get backups, but also primary storage in general.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So the other thing that I think back to traditional backups and I look at the modern backup solutions today and I start to think, you know, all right, well, what makes a modern backup? Well, obviously it needs to have, you know, we talked about some of these, right? It has to have some intelligence, has to have some possibly deduplication. It has to have the ability to leverage snapshots. It needs to have, you know, integrated, you know, we need to have RBAC, security, encryption, all that good stuff. But a lot of folks are also looking to the cloud for backups. And so I wanted to sort of address that a little bit. So what exactly makes a good cloud backup solution? Because I know some of the things you hear at face value is that they can be, you know, Hotel California. They can be easy to back your stuff up, but expensive to get back. So what are some of the key aspects of like a good cloud backup solution?
So some of the things that, you know, customers, when we talk to, like, you know, large enterprise customers, they definitely want a a software that which they can put in the data center should be also cloud enabled, which means is that tomorrow, if I, so some of them are right now running a private cloud within their local environment, but when they want to extend this and be in a hybrid environment, say I'm running some part of my workload in the cloud, and I want to actually have one single backup software to manage all these things, right? So they should be able to not only see their data center from a backup standpoint, but also extend that in the cloud and use the same management console to backup things in the VM, which could be, you know, VMware on AWS, or which could be IBM on IBM cloud, or VMware on IBM cloud, or things that we see that customers asking for. One is truly just backing up VMs in the cloud. The second use case which we're seeing is, hey, I want a DR strategy in the cloud. So yeah, I should be able to back up this on my on-prem and then replicate my data repository, which is using, you know, whatever our vSnap repository replication, spin up a vSnap repository in the cloud, whether it's IBM cloud or any of your private cloud which has a VMware environment, and then that becomes your destination for DR recovery. Yes, as you know, Pete mentioned, is the cost that customers would pay is the cost for storing that data in the cloud, right? There's one piece where transferring the data into the cloud is, from a replication perspective, is, you know, based on how much you're transferring. But the bigger chunks of the cost actually is coming is the storage that you're consuming in the cloud.
Okay.
Well, and orchestrating that lifecycle, that's something that I don't think people fully appreciate, all the cost for API updates and things like that, or moving it to colder tiers within cloud. There's a lot of room for optimization of that cloud storage.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, it's basically what they're looking at is, you know, seamlessly extend that data protection and archive and DR for all of their physical, virtual, and cloud environments. It's how quickly I can access it, right? Yes, there is a cost associated with it, the big time, but the seamless integration tomorrow, when based on my business needs or enhance my business agility, how quickly I can actually move my data. And, you know, some vendors do offer saying, hey, bring your own licensing to the cloud. And that's big. So if you're using a license for backing up your systems on-prem, you can bring them into VMware on IBM or VMware AWS cloud, and you can use those licenses. So it minimizes some of the cost, but you still, there is the big chunk of cost is the storage.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Another one I wanted to ask you before we ended was agents, right? Like that was a big thing in traditional backup. It's like every single server you had to deploy an agent. And then when you were managing and updating your service, you had to make sure that the agents were still there, that they were current and all that stuff. And so is it fair to say that any modern backup solution needs to be agentless?
So there are two ways to answer this, yes and no. So yes, from a VMware perspective. So for example, if you're looking at backing up your VMs and backing up the files inside those VMs and things like that, so then yeah, that should be a core, like a modern kind of a backup and recovery. So you don't need you don't need an agent at that point. The agents come into play when you are looking at if you want an application aware, you want to actually do a application consistent backup, and then working with the technologies like VSS APIs and make sure that, you know, put the database in a hot backup mode and create the snapshot. In certain scenarios, I know some vendors do offer that it's agentless, and some vendors do offer an agent, a very lightweight agent, so that it's just kind of like deployed and it's sitting there, but it doesn't really do any performance impact on those systems. But the key is you have to, you know, if you are looking for an application consistent and it's like, I want to be doubly sure that this backup is consistent and this is my life insurance policy that I'm taking backup of this database snapshot. It is consistent and it is integrating with the VSS or, you know, RMAN or using Oracle APIs. So in certain cases, you would need those agents, but in most, you know, I would say 70 to 80% of just for backing up VMs, you don't need those agents, so that there's no overhead of maintaining those
at
that point.
Well, I was going to say, I think what made us all hate agents back in the day, we're like, death to agents, was we had to manually go manage those. And particularly, I mean, you know, maybe I'm dating myself here, but it felt like anything that involved an agent on Windows 2003, any attempt to remotely automate its life cycle was doomed for failure.
Yeah.
And we use vStorage APIs. I mean, heavily rely on the, you know, the VMware vCenter APIs to interact, you know, query, run the inventory analysis, you know, in fact, leverage the VMware guest tools in some cases. I mean, you can get away without the agents, but having the VMware guest tools installed and, you know, it will do the crash consistent snapshots at that point.
Well, and it's been interesting because it used to be, you know, if we go back to, again, back to the Stone Ages here, you know, when you had SQL 2000 and you had SQL 2005 and some of these older databases, if you had crash consistency, it felt like you were, you know, rolling some dice as to whether or not you'd be greeted by an 8-hour log play. I feel like applications, at least modern applications for people who have those, they've gotten a lot better at coming up from a crash consistent state.
Oh, yeah.
I'll give Microsoft credit. NTFS, just because the default troubleshooting of junior Windows admins everywhere was turn it on and off again, they kind of had to make it crash consistent, because if turning it on and off again and holding down the power button resulted in, you know, 8-hour log replays every time, or just a file system being corrupt,
yeah,
you know, they would have been laughed out of the enterprise. And so it's something that, you know, proper consistency is still very important, and it is still good, and it is still something we should strive for. But I don't want to say it's less important, but some of the layers have become a little more resilient than they used to be, at least. Although some of these new cloud native apps, it can get dicey depending on mixes of file systems and things. So being able to run scripts or put stuff in hot backup mode and things like that, it's still important.
Yeah, and I think you brought up a good point about the scripts too, right? So today, even today, actually, you'd be surprised that a lot of customers are asking, hey, I want to do pre and post scripts, right? So that is also a key thing when you're actually as a backup vendor. Just simple things like, I want to close all my SQL connections before I actually do the backup. So having those kind of functions and features, and even excluding some of the resources, I should be able to exclude, if this is part of the SLA, I should be able to exclude some things which I don't want to backup, or exclude a VMDK, which I don't want to be included in the backup. Say those VMDKs have, you know, MP3 files or MPEG files. I just don't want to back them up.
Yep, yep.
Things like those is definitely a key from a backup and recovery standpoint.
Yeah. I don't know. I might be wrong here because I'm definitely not an administrator anymore, but it just seems like the way things are going, and it just seems like, especially I think Amazon spoiled us all, because I remember being a consultant, and you know, if I couldn't get enough space from the company that I was working at to deploy a lab, I would just go to AWS and spin up my own machines, and they would take care of the backup. Things just got a lot simpler when we started using some of these as a service products, if you will. So I just imagine like deploying a backup nowadays, it should be simple. Like I don't think it needs to be as complicated as it used to be. Is that another requirement, do you think? Like the simplicity to stand up and manage a backup solution, or does that not matter?
Absolutely. That's one of the top things that if you see some of the, let me give you an example, the traditional backups and softwares, which, you know, some of the vendors out there, it could even, as John would probably even comment on it, is it take a day, a couple of days, or maybe even a few days to just implement the solution to with the right integration, with the right SLA, manning the jobs, make sure that the databases are covered, the granularity things are restored, test. So all that could be a big time consuming from an end-to-end delivery perspective, right? So now one of the requirements for the modern day backup is the simplicity and ease of management. You should be able to spin up this backup environment in less than 10 minutes and should be able to start backing up in an hour with all the predefined SLAs and predefined backup and things like that. Of course, there will be some kind of fine tuning and some sizing requirement based on your environment, but this is the norm that I should, you know, anybody should be able to actually import this OVA and deploy this in their VMware infrastructure or Hyper-V infrastructure and should be backing up their VMs in less than an hour. That's the core norm requirement these days.
Oh, yeah. I have to admit, I deployed your OVA in my lab, and you're actually, I'm still using it. It's protecting my SQL database, and it was awesome. Really simple. I was actually surprised at how quick we got that up and running.
Yeah, it's pretty, you know, dumb simple as it's like. It's, we use all pretty much compliant from a VMware infrastructure standpoint with an, you know, OVA. And then also you can not only just deploy the backup repository in a virtual environment, you can have a physical environment for the backup repository. And with our latest release, now you can actually replicate to a DR instance one to many. So in that secondary copy can be, it doesn't need to be in sync. It could be like a deferred replication. So you can actually say, I want to retain 15 copies of the replicated copy in my DR. And then you can have on the primary, you can have the live data back.
Nice. Having differentiated SLAs and being able to map that out, it does lead to a lot of cost savings. Because if you have that, you know, I put on my dictator hat here and have, you know, backtater
backup admin fascism or whatever. If everyone has the same SLA, everyone has the same number of copies in all places, you know, you're gonna waste a lot of money. And that always led to some interesting arguments between the storage and the backup guy. If the backup guy wasn't administrating his own storage silos, I'm like, why are you using all of this space? What are you doing? And being able to intelligently do that across the stack, and I guess that control of the copies and that management, I mean, that even extends to the app layer, because the amount of people who say, oh, I've got 100 terabyte database, and I'm like, all right, let's look into that a little bit. Let's actually look at what's sitting in that database server, and you'll find that you have a 10 terabyte database and you have 9 copies of the database sitting next to it. Being able to pierce through and have some visibility and have, you know, that indexing and that vision and that control, this is the secret to controlling your backup costs. Getting it to where at every layer, the storage, the backup, and the app layer, you don't have 20 copies of data that's being nested and basically exponentially replicating. That's how you control. That is a great way to control costs.
Yeah, and that's something which the other thing which you brought into the point is not only retaining by number of days, but you can also retain by number of snapshots that you keep. Right, so that also makes the data that you're storing much more efficient from a retention standpoint. So those are some of the flexibilities you need to. Some people just say, okay, you just put it for these number of days, but in a day you could have 30 snapshots or 40 snapshots. But if you give them a flexibility that I need to only retain by, you know, 10 snapshots or 15 snapshots. Say, for instance, like when you have, you know, faster flash systems that you're deploying this backup repository, right? I want to be clone, backup, recover how quickly things can. Then you can granularity down, say, okay, I want to say only 3 or 5 snapshots on my flash system and rest can actually go to a disk, right? So for my things in immediate recovery. So those kind of flexibility also plays a big part in a requirement perspective.
Well, and I like the whole idea of the policy being more of an imperative control than a declarative. And to kind of explain that, it's, I need this type of protection on these types of media. Go figure out what you have that can deliver it.
Yep.
Versus manually selecting which silos and which clouds and which bespoke object that's going to deliver that capability. That's the only way you can scale as a backup administrator.
Yeah, and as you said, like we can tailor our solution based on the storage. Like, for example, like as I said, our architecture can be deployed as one big package of the virtual appliance or can be decoupled, right? So in what happens when you decouple it, so the management layer becomes separate and the backup storage becomes separate. Now you could actually dedicate your backup storage saying, hey, this is my for primary site and this is on flash. And this is on my secondary site, this is on the disk array. And you can have a third copy, you can say, hey, this is my retention and have a different SLA. And when you create these SLAs, you can map those sites to those specific storage within your SLA policies when you create it. So you have a lot of flexibility to play around with based on your needs, based on your business SLAs and map those up to the backend storage so that you actually provide a most efficient backup systems. And these are one of the key requirements for modernization too. So I should be able to deploy this in any type of an environment.
Oh yeah, sure. Awesome. Well, man, we've been pounding through a bunch of different requirements, if you will, for a modern backup environment. So I'm really curious if you're listening to this, if you manage a backup solution, or if you're a vendor, if you're whatever, I'm curious to what your input is on this. Like, what makes a modern backup solution? You know, what's the cutoff? What has to happen? And I'd love to hear your input, as maybe even some of your horror stories. So feel free to send any of that information to podcast@vmware.com, and I'll be sure to add some of your comments to the show notes of this podcast. Sweet. Well, Narayan, thanks for joining us, man. I love talking to different companies about other solutions. And so this was a great conversation around backup. As I mentioned, there's a ton of different backup solutions out there. I'd love to get like a panel. I was thinking about doing like a, John, we should do a whole backup panel, have like Veeam, Rubrik, and IBM and Commvault and all these guys, and just have a full-on just a backup conversation about, you know, what things were, what things need to be, what the problems that are still out there. What do you think, John?
I like that idea, because I feel like if you do primary storage people in a panel, you're expecting like a woodshed or like a throwdown WWE style.
Yeah.
But backup people, a backup conversation, I feel like it's a common fight against data loss and loss of availability.
Yeah, well so said.
It'll be a much more civil, like we can have high tea, you know, during the panel or something versus, you know, worrying about someone getting thrown through the announcer table.
Fair enough. Yeah. Yeah, no Von Stewart versus Chad Sakic type.
I think you caught my reference there. So.
Oh, yeah.
You're Bush League.
Absolutely. All right. John, anything else before we let Narayan go?
I think that's it. Let's land this plane.
Yes, sir. All right. Well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to Narayan Kumar for joining us and talking some backups this week. We're back next week, but until then, bye for now. A whole podcast about backups and no reference to back that up.
I was trying to avoid that, the obvious jokes.
Yeah.
This is good. It's a great cover.
Enough of this jibber jabber.